quite a lot of people have written asking things, asking all manner of questions. Well, it would be a good idea if this book were devoted to answering what appear to be common questions. People have a right to know, otherwise they get weird ideas such as those who think that death is a terrible thing, such as those who think there is no afterlife. Well, it always amuses me when people say there is no afterlife just because they don't know about it. In the same way a person living in a remote country area can say there is no London, no New York, no Buenos Aires because they haven't actually seen it. After all, pictures can be faked. I have seen a lot of faked pictures about life on the other side, and that is quite a pity. There is a very, very good other side, and it is the depth of absurdity when crooks and perverted seers produce a lot of faked stuff. It's so easy to produce the actual reality, easier in fact. I had hoped to get on with the aura research. Unfortunately, I have had to leave it through lack of money, and now, well, there is no medical health scheme here, not like in England, and everything is frightfully expensive. So the aura work will have to be left for others. There is another project which I wanted to develop, and it is this. It is absolutely possible to make a device which will enable one to telephone the astral world. It has actually been done, but the man who did it had such a barrage of doubts, suspicions, and accusations from the press that he got tired of it, he lost heart, and driven by the insane press he smashed his apparatus and committed suicide. It is quite possible to make a telephone with which to telephone the astral world. Consider speech now. When we speak we cause a vibration which imparts its energy to a column of air, which in turn energizes some receiving apparatus, for example, someone's ear, and so they hear the sounds we make. It is interpreted as speech. No one has ever yet succeeded in standing atop a radio mast and shouting to the world, and being heard all over the world. For that the vibrations are transformed into a different form of energy in messages spoken and transformed into this energy can be heard, with suitable apparatus, all over the world. I listen to England, Japan, Australia, Germany, everywhere. I have even heard Little America in the South Antarctic. A device to telephone the astral is something like that. It transforms present-day radio waves into something incomparably higher, just as radio waves in turn are very much higher in frequency than is speech. In days to come people will be able to telephone those who have newly passed over in much the same way as a person can now telephone a hospital and, if he is lucky and the nurse is feeling good-tempered, can speak to a patient who is recovering from an operation. So it will be that those who have newly passed over and are recuperating from the strain of passing over, just as a mother and baby recuperate from birth strains, so while this recuperation process is taking place relatives can telephone a reception area and find out how the patient is doing. Naturally, when the patient is quite recovered and has gone to yet other dimensions he or she will be too busy to be bothered by the petty little affairs of this earth. This earth is just a speck of dust existing for the twinkle of an eye in what is the real time. For those who are interested, I have actually seen such a telephone and actually seen it in use. It's a pity that the idiot press is not subject to censorship because they should not be permitted to take foolish actions just for the sake of sensation, and so inhibit what are real developments. So now let us consider this as a start, and the ending of the first chapter. We will go on together and see what we can do to answer some questions in the second. Chapter 2. Never reply to criticism, to do so is to weaken your case. The old man was alone at home. Ma, Buttercup, Miss Cleopatra and Miss Tadlinker were out about the ordinary business which seems to surround all households, out shopping, because even in the best ordered communities there is always the inevitable shopping. Potatoes, soap flakes, various other things including, well, let us whisper it, unmentionable requisites without which in modern days we cannot easily manage. So the old man was lying back in his bed listening to the radio. Reception was good. The program was coming along on the African service of the BBC very clearly and with good volume. Someone was playing the new musical hits. The old man smiled at one piece with the unlikely title of Astral Journey. He had to stop his program because the telephone was ringing. The telephone beside his bed. With that disposed of, he switched on again in time to hear one of the latest hits. An announcer of the BBC, or disc jockey, or whatever he was, announced in a decidedly cockney voice that he was just going to put on the latest record. Without the night there would be no sunshine. Without the night there would be no sunshine. Did the fellow know that he uttered a great truth there? One has to have extremes in order to have anything. Sometimes from the USA, particularly on a Sunday, there comes by way of the short waves a horrible program sent out by some gang of revivalist missionaries. The uproar, the ranting, is enough to turn anyone against Christianity. And then from a station. In South America just by the equator there is another religious revival gang. They fairly hoot about the terrors of not being a Christian. Everyone not a Christian according to this station, is damned and will go to hell. Surely not the way to conduct a sane religion. Without the night there can be no sunshine, without evil there can be no good, without Satan there can be no God, without cold there can be no heat. Without extremes, how can there be anything? If there were no extremes there would be only a static condition. Think of when you breathe, you force out your breath, that is one extreme because to all practical purposes you have no breath within you and you are in danger of suffocating. Then you take in breath and you have a lot of air in you, and if you take in too much breath too quickly you are in danger through hyperventilation. But again, if you do not breathe out and you do not breathe in, then you have nothing and you can't live. Some remarkably foolish person in Nova Scotia sent me a silly, badly duplicated, purplish effusion about sinners and Satan. Apparently the idea was that I should send them some money as that would help wipe out Satan. Wipe out Satan? Perhaps they were going to get some of the latest detergents and spread it on a new floor cloth, or something, and try to rub out old Satan that way. Anyway, all that garbage went where it should go, in the garbage. There must be negative or there cannot be positive. There must be opposites or there is no motion. Everything that exists has motion. Night gives way to day, day gives way to night, summer gives way to winter, winter gives way to summer, and so on. There just has to be motion, there just have to be extremes. It's not bad to have extremes, it just means that two points are separated from each other as far as they can be. So, good old Satan, keep him going for a time because without Satan there could be no God, without God there could be no Satan because there wouldn't be any humans either. The worst Satan is the awful driveler who tries to ram some religion down the throat of a person of another religion. I am a Buddhist, and I definitely resent all the stupid creeps who send me Bibles, New Testaments, Old Testaments, pretty pictures, purely imaginary of course, or should it be impurely? Of crucifixions, etc., etc., ad lib, ad nauseam. I am a Buddhist. All right, I am an extreme from Christianity, but Christians are extreme from me as a Buddhist. I do not try to get any converts to Buddhism, in fact a vast number of people write and ask me if they can become Buddhists, and my invariable answer is that they should remain affiliated with the religion to which they were born unless there is some great overriding condition or circumstance. I do not like people who change their religion just because it is the done thing, or the newest thing, or because they want a thrill and have people point them out saying, look, he's a Buddhist. But without the darkness there can be no sunshine. Yes, Mr. Announcer with the cockney voice, you certainly said a great truth there. Don't let's persecute old Satan so much. He's got to live otherwise there is no standard of comparison, is there? If there was no talk of Satan, how would you judge good? If there was no bad there could be no good. Obviously not, because there would be no standard of comparison, because one must be able to compare X with Y, then we have good and bad just as in USA and Canada, it seems, there have to be good guys and bad guys. The good guys are always the red-blooded he-men. All American with Ivy League suits and the Pepsodent smile, whereas the bad guy is automatically the poor Indian who was swindled out of his country with a lot of specious promises. But think of the television program, wouldn't it be dull if there were no good guys who could fight against the bad guys? Or if there were no bad guys who could show how good the good guys really were. So, to all you people who write in and say don't I think Satan should be bumped off or rubbed out or excommunicated or sent to Russia, or something, let me say. Now, no, I think Satan is a good guy in that he provides a fall guy for good, he provides a standard against which we can measure good. So let's drink a toast to Satan, but just for luck let's have some sulfuric acid and brimstone in a glass and tip it upside down, it's safer that way. The old man groaned as he unfolded the letter. I wrote to England for a touchstone, he read, for weeks it was and I sent them the money, but I haven't had an answer. I think I am being swindled. The old man groaned aloud. Then he looked at the envelope and groaned again. First of all, the old man is not in any way connected or interested in any business concern or venture. Sometimes a firm will branch out and claim that it is associated with Lobsang Rampa, etc., etc. There is only one case, and that is with a firm in England. They have permission to use the name of the Rampa Touchstone Company. But, again, the old man wants to make it very, very clear that he is not connected with nor interested in any business enterprise. There is one firm with whom the old man is extraordinarily displeased because they advertise a mail order company using the name of the old man's first book, entirely without his permission, definitely with his disapproval. So, there it is, that's business for you. But the old man groaned as he looked at the envelope, and he groaned because neither on the envelope nor on the letter was there any address. In the USA and Canada people sometimes put their name and address on the envelope but rarely on the letter where it should be. In England and Europe the letter sheet itself bears the name and address of the sender, and so one can always reply to letters from England and Europe, yet this particular person groaning so bitterly and so libelously about being swindled had no address to which one could reply. What should one do then? The signature was just Mabel, nothing else. No surname, no address, and the postmark, well, that could not be read even with a magnifying glass. So you people who complain that you have had no reply, who complain that you are being swindled, ask yourself, did you really put your address on the letter or on the envelope? A little time ago we had a letter and we couldn't read a single word of it. Probably it was in English, but we just couldn't read any part of it, so it had to go unanswered. The purpose of a letter is to make something known, and if the writing cannot be read the letter fails in its purpose, and if there is no address on it, well, it is just a waste of time. The old man listening to his program, the overseas program of the BBC, pondered upon sounds. A few years back music was a very pleasant thing, a soothing thing or a rousing thing, but now, what has happened to the world? The stuff that is coming from England is like a horde of tomcats with their tails tied together. It isn't music, I don't know what it is. But sounds, well, different sounds are peculiar to different cultures. People have certain sounds which are alleged to do them good, such as the sound of om correctly pronounced. Yet there are other sounds which are not socially acceptable. The sounds of certain four-letter words, for example, are not socially acceptable, and yet perhaps those same sounds are absolutely permissible in the language of another culture. There is a certain four-letter sound which is naughty, naughty, very naughty indeed in English, and yet the sound in Russian is perfectly correct, perfectly decent, and used many, many times a day. Do not place too great a reliance on sounds. Many people get almost demented wondering if they are pronouncing om correctly. Of itself om is nothing, it doesn't mean a thing, of itself, not even if you pronounce it as it should be pronounced in Sanskrit. It is useless to pronounce a metaphysical word of power correctly unless you also think correctly. Consider this, think of your radio program. You have certain sounds which, of themselves, cannot be transmitted. Those sounds can only be transmitted if first of all you have a carrier wave. A carrier wave is similar to the light you have to show before you can transmit a sign picture or a television picture, or show your slides on a screen. The slides themselves, without light, are nothing. You have to have a light beam as a carrier, and in precisely the same way you have to have a carrier wave before you can transmit your radio program. Again, in exactly the same way the sound of om, etc., or some other word of power merely acts as a carrier wave to correct thoughts. Do you want it made clearer? All right. Suppose we made a phonograph record which had nothing but om correctly pronounced, om, 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 om. You could play that record forever and a day provided it did not wear out first, and you just wouldn't do any good because the phonograph player, or gramophone, if you happen to be in England, is an unthinking machine. Om is useful only when one is thinking correctly as well as sounding correctly. The best way to improve is to get one's thoughts right and let the sound take care of itself. Sounds. What a powerful thing a sound can be. It can add impetus to one's thoughts. Music, good music, can stir one and lift one up spiritually. It can lead one to a greater belief in the honesty of one's fellows. Surely that is a most desirable attainment in itself. But music specially designed can make a rabble into a warlike army. Marching songs can help one march correctly and with less effort, but now, what's happened to the world? What's all this stuff worse than jazz, worse than rock and roll? What's happened that young people are trying to drive themselves crazier with discordant cacophony which seems to be designed to bring out all the worst in them, drive them to drug addiction, drive them to perversions, and all the rest of it? That's what happens, you know. People subjected to the wrong sound can have a longing for drugs. Drinking songs can make people desire to drink more. Some of the old German Biergarten songs were much the same as salted nuts provided, apparently, by some bars to increase the thirst and enable one to drink more to the greater glory of the publican's income. Now there are wars, revolutions, and hatreds and disturbances all over the world. Man fights against man, and things will get much worse before they get much better. Sounds, bad sounds, cause it. Screaming, ranting agitators rousing the worst thoughts in the rabble just as Hitler, a most gifted but distorted orator, was able to rouse normally staid, sensible Germans to a frenzy, to an orgy of destruction and savagery. If only we could change the world by eliminating all the discordant music, all the discordant voices who preach hate, hate, hate. If only people would think love and kindness and consideration for others. There is no need for things to go on as they are. It needs just a few determined people of pure thought to produce those necessary sounds in music and in speech as would enable our poor sorely stricken world to regain some semblance of sanity instead of all the vandalism and juvenile delinquency which assails us daily. Then, too, there should be some censorship of the press, for the press always, almost without exception, strives to make things appear more sensational, more bloodthirsty, more horrendous than really is the case. Why not all of us have a period of meditation, thinking good thoughts, thinking and also saying good thoughts? It's so easy because the power of sound controls the thoughts of many people. Sound, provided it has a thought behind it. The old man lay back in his bed. The poor fellow had no choice. Miss Cleopatra was lying on his chest with her head nestling in his beard, purring contentedly. She gazed up with the bluest of blue eyes. Miss Cleopatra Ramper, the most intelligent of people, the most loving and unselfish of people, just a little animal to most people, although an exceptionally beautiful animal. To the old man this was a definite, intelligent person, a person who had come to this earth to do a specific task and who was doing it nobly and with entire success. A person with whom the old man had long telepathic conversations, and he learned much from her. In the electric wheelchair Miss Tadlinka Rampa was curled up snoring away. Every so often her whiskers would twitch and her eyes would roll beneath her closed eyelids. Taddy was a most affectionate person, and Taddy loved comfort. Comfort and food were Taddy's main preoccupations, and yet Taddy earned her food and her comfort. Taddy, the most telepathic of cats, did her share in keeping in touch with various parts of the world. There came a light tap at the door and friendly neighbor came in and plonked a solid behind with a resounding thwack upon a seat which seemed inadequate to contain such bulk. "Love your cats, don't you, Gov?" said friendly neighbor with a smile. "Love them? Good gracious, yes. I regard them as my children, and as remarkably intelligent children at that. These cats do more for me than humans. By now Tadlinker was alert, sitting up ready to growl, ready to attack if necessary, because both little cats can be very, very fierce indeed in defense of what they regard as their responsibilities. At one apartment a man had tried to enter at night. Both cats had rushed to the door and nearly scared 10 years of growth onto the poor fellow, because a Siamese cat in a fury is quite a frightening sight. They puff out, every hair of their fur stands straight out at right angles to the body, their tails fluff out, they stand on tiptoe and they look like something out of the Inferno. They should not be called cats really, because they are unlike cats. They roar, growl and fume, and nothing is too dangerous for a Siamese cat protecting a person or property. There are many legends about protecting by Siamese cats, many legends originating in the East about how this or that Siamese cat protected important people or sick people. But, enough. No one else tried to enter our apartment without our knowledge. The story of the fierce Rampa cats went the round, and people are more frightened of wild Siamese cats than they are of mad dogs, it seems. So it was, or, should it be, now it is, that now with the old man so disabled the two little cats are ever alert to rush to his defense. Oh yes, among our questions, here is a question from a lady who asks about animals. Where is it now? Ah, here. Can you tell us what happens to our pets when they leave this earth? Are they utterly destroyed, or do they eventually reincarnate as humans? The Bible tells us that only humans go to heaven. What have you to say about it? Madame, I have a lot to say about it. The Bible was written a long time after the events related happened. The Bible is not the original writings either. It is a translation of a translation of a translation of another translation which had been retranslated to suit some king or some political power, or something else. Think of the King James edition, or this edition or that edition. A lot of things written in the Bible are bunk. No doubt there was a lot of truth in the original scriptures, but a lot of things in the Bible now are no more truth than the truth of the press, and anyone knows what a lot of bilge that is. The Bible seems to teach humans that they are the lords of creation, that the whole world was made for man. Well, man has made an awful mess of the world, hasn't he? Where are there not wars, or rumors of wars? Where is there no sadism, no terror, no persecution? You will have to move off this earth if you want an answer to that. But we are dealing with animals and what happens to them. In the first case, there are many different species of creatures. Humans are animals, whether you like it or not. Humans are animals, horrid, uncouth, unfriendly animals, more savage than any of the nature type animals. Because humans have a thumb and fingers, they have been able to develop along certain lines because they can use their hands to fabricate things, and that animals cannot do. Man lives in a very material world and only believes that which he can grasp between his fingers and his thumb. Animals, not having thumbs and not being able to grasp a thing in two hands, have had to evolve spiritually, and most animals are spiritual. They do not kill unless for the absolute necessity of eating, and if a cat terrorizes and tortures a mouse, well, that is an illusion of the human. The mouse is quite oblivious of it because it is hypnotized and feels no pain. Do you like that? Under stress a person's sensations are anesthetized, so in times of war, for example, a man can have an arm shot off and apart from a very dim numbness, he will not feel it until loss of blood makes him weak. Or a person piloting a plane, for instance, can be shot through the shoulder, but he will go on piloting his plane and bring it down safely, and only when the excitement has ended will he feel pain. In the case of our mouse, by that time the mouse doesn't feel anything anymore. Horses do not reincarnate as daffodils. Marmosets do not reincarnate as maggots, or vice versa. There are different groups of nature people, each one in a separate isolated shell which does not impinge upon the spiritual or astral existence of others. What that really means is that a monkey never reincarnates as a man never reincarnates as a mouse, although, admittedly, many men are mouse-like in their lack of intestinal fortitude, which is a very polite way of explaining, well, You know what? It is a definite statement of fact that no animal reincarnates as a human. I know humans are animals as well, but I am using the accepted, the commonly accepted term. One refers to humans and one refers to animals because humans like to be buttered up a bit, and so one pretends that they are not animals but a special form of creature, one of God's chosen, humans. So, the human animal never, never reincarnates as a canine animal or feline animal, or equine animal. And, again, our old friend vice versa. The human animal has one type of evolution which he must follow, the, which shall we say question mark has a different, and not necessarily parallel, form of evolution to follow. So they are not interchangeable entities. Many Buddhist scriptures refer to humans coming back as spiders or tigers or something else, but of course that is not believed by the educated Buddhist, that started as a misunderstanding many centuries ago in much the same way as there is a misunderstanding about Father Christmas, or about little girls being made of sugar and spice and all things nice. You and I know that all little girls are not nice, some of them are very nice, some of them are proper stinkers, but, of course, you and I, we only know the nice ones, don't we? When a human dies, the human goes to the astral plane, about which we shall say more later, and when an animal dies, it, too, goes to an astral plane where it is met by its own kind, where there is perfect understanding, where there is perfect rapport between them. As in the case of humans, animals cannot be bothered by those with whom they are incompatible, and now study this carefully. When a person who loves an animal dies and goes to the astral world, that person can be in contact with the loved animal, they can be together if there is absolute love between them. Further, if humans were more telepathic, if they were more believing, if they would open their minds and receive, then loved animals who had passed over could keep in touch with the humans even before the humans passed over. Let me tell you something, I have a number of little people who have passed over, and I am still very definitely, very much in contact with them. There is one little Siamese cat, Cindy, with whom I am in daily contact, and Cindy has helped me enormously. On Earth she had a very bad time indeed. Now she is helping, helping, always helping. She is doing absolutely as much as anyone on the other side can do for anyone on this side. Those who truly love their so-called pets can be sure that when this life has ended for both, then they can come together again, but it's not the same. When humans are on the earth, they are a disbelieving crew, cynical, hard, blasé and all the rest. When they get to the other side, they get a shake or two which enables them to realize that they are not the lords of creation they thought they were, but just part of a divine plan. On the other side, they realize that others have rights as well. When they get to the other side, they find that they can talk with utmost clarity to animals who are also on the other side, and animals will answer them in any language they care to use. It is a limitation on humans that most of them while on Earth are not telepathic, most of them, while on Earth, are not aware of the character and ability and powers of so-called animals. But when they pass over, it all comes clear to them. And humans then are like a person born blind who suddenly can see. Yes, animals go to heaven, not the Christian heaven, of course, but that is no loss. Animals have a real heaven, no angels with goose feathers for wings, it's a real heaven, and they have a Manu, or God, who looks after them. Whatever man can obtain or attain on the other side, so can an animal, peace, learning, advancement, anything and everything. Upon the earth, man is in the position of being the dominant species, dominant because of the fearful weapons he has. Unarmed, a man would be no match for a determined dog. Armed with some artificial method such as a gun, a man can dominate a whole pack of dogs, and it is only through man's viciousness that the telepathic power of communication with animals has been lost. That is the real story of the Tower of Babel, you know. Mankind was telepathic for general use, and mankind used speech only in local dialects for communicating with members of the family when they did not want the community as a whole to know what was being said. But then man lured animals into traps by false telepathy, by false promises. As a result, mankind lost the telepathic power as a punishment, and now only a few people on this earth are telepathic, and for those of us who it is like being a sighted person in the country of the blind. Well, madame, to answer the question in your letter briefly, no, humans do not reincarnate as animals, animals do not.